about them in the Bible. And there really have been a lot of myths built out around them through the years that really aren't true. At one point, people called them kings. Hence, we have the carol, "We Three Kings." But they weren't kings. We traditionally think that there were only three wise men because the text tells us they brought only three gifts, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. But probably in all reality, these were very wealthy and powerful people. They probably traveled with a much larger caravan, even guards for protection. We just simply don't know. Some 700 years after the visit to Jerusalem, somebody came up with the names for them, Caspar, Balthazar, and Melchior. But there's really no basis for those names. That's just somebody at some point's invention and creation. We don't know their names. And we usually picture the wise men visiting the baby Jesus in the manger just after his birth. But if you listen to our text, it says that Jesus, that they visited Jesus when he was living in a house with Mary and Joseph. So they probably visited them a few months after his birth. We know Herod the Great died in 4 BC, and he was king when Jesus was born. So the wise men probably, think about this, visited the baby Jesus some 5 to 7 years before Jesus was supposedly born. In other words, our calendar system did not get it completely right in terms of the dating system. So what do we really know about the wise men? Wise men is a good translation for the word magi. That's the alternative name we often hear for them. And so that word also appears in Acts 13, speaking about a magician, Elymas, and is used there in a negative sense, referring to someone who practiced sorcery and the magical arts. Now, the magi weren't charlatans in the same way that he was, and like many today who seek to tell fortunes or to project and do those kinds of things. Magi were part of a priestly class who advised the kings of Persia and the kings of Parthia during Jesus' time, both of which were based in what today is modern-day Iran. Now, they possessed wisdom concerning the movement of the stars and an impact on human history. They were astrologers. They were very wealthy and people of real influence and power. The major religion of the Parthian Empire was Zoroastrianism, which dominated the life of Iran from some 6th century BC until about 7th century AD when Islam finally came on the scene. That faith was monotheistic, and they emphasized the one God who ruled over all other gods. And it emphasized free will and the right of human beings to accept the divine order, to reject it, or to pursue evil or anything they desired. Astrology was a big part of that faith. So our text says that they saw a star in the east. Now, today, many astronomers suggest that what they saw was the conjunction of two planets, Jupiter and Saturn, which happens every so often. But that's open to question, and there's much debate about that. They took that as a sign that a special king, the king of the Jews, was being born. Now, why they associated that star with the king of the Jews being born, we'll talk about that in a little bit. But what is interesting here is that the Magi who visited Jesus were not Jews, but they were Gentiles. They came from a completely foreign culture with a different religion. They practiced astrology. Now, astrology and other forms of occult practices are specifically forbidden in the scriptures. The Bible teaches that there are spiritual beings and forces that have certain powers and act in opposition to God, and those are the basis for the occult practices. So followers of Jesus are supposed to avoid our participation in those kinds of practices. Fortune-telling, astrology, horoscopes, Ouija boards, all those things. The Bible specifically forbids those things. In Deuteronomy, the law says, when you arrive in the land the Lord your God is giving you, be very careful not to imitate the detestable customs of the nations living there. Do not let your people practice fortune-telling or sorcery, or allow them to interpret omens, or engage in witchcraft, or cast spells, or function as mediums or psychics, or call forth the spirits of the dead. Anyone who does these things is an object of horror and disgust to the Lord. Elsewhere in Isaiah, God specifically condemns Babylon for its occult practices. The book of Daniel tells us that astrology and all kinds of occult practices were an integral part of the Persian Empire, that whole region there in the world. It says, Daniel answered the king of Persia and said, no wise men, enchanters, magicians, or astrologers can show to the king the mystery that the king has asked. But there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries. So why do I tell you this? It is just kind of a warning that Christians, as Christians, we should stay away from all those practices today. But primarily, I want to address a very common question that we hear in the world today. If Jesus is the only way to God, what about all the other religions and religious people around the world? Are they condemned because they didn't grow up where they didn't hear about Jesus? And the first point I want to make today out of the story of the Magi is this. God is always just. God brings the knowledge about himself to anyone who is searching for truth, regardless of nationality, regardless of religious background, regardless of when or where they lived. Think about the Magi. They were wise men. They were Gentiles who were part of empires who oppressed the Jews. They practiced astrology, specifically condemned by the Bible. They grew up in another religious tradition. But God still communicated with them in a way that they could hear through their astrological practices. They were searching for truth and a new hope, and we'll explain how we know that in a few minutes. God touched their lives and brought them to worship the baby Jesus, the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords. One of the things we have to recognize is that God is completely fair and just in his dealings with people. God always brings the truth to people who are looking for a true knowledge of him. In Muslim countries today, I have said this many times to you, but people are having dreams and visions about Jesus when they have no knowledge of who he is and they are coming to faith. That's been true throughout history of missions. There's always been people coming to faith who had no knowledge. There's an abundance of testimony for that. I believe that when we reach heaven, we will really be surprised at the diversity of people and where they came from in heaven. We'll see that. I want you to listen to this video clip about a woman and her mother who came to faith in present-day Iran. She was disillusioned with her own faith, was longing for truth and purpose in her life, and God reached out to her. Listen to this clip. So let's move on. What motivated the Magi to travel some 1,200 miles to Bethlehem? How did they ever know that Jesus was the King of the Jews? Well, we should note several things. You know, there were many Jews living in Persia and Parthia who remained there after they were carted off into captivity by Nebuchadnezzar. You know, after Daniel interpreted the dream for Nebuchadnezzar in Babylon, no other wise man could do it. Daniel 2 tells us that he made Daniel ruler over all the wise men in Babylon, all the wise men in that area of the world. Nehemiah, who was learned in the Old Testament scriptures, like Daniel, was the chief cupbearer to the king of Persia. He knew the expectation of a Messiah, a king to come. Esther, another devout Jew, became queen in Persia. There were often Jews in powerful positions there who brought the knowledge of scriptures that the Jews were awaiting a king who would rule in justice and righteousness. Now, during these years also, all throughout the Middle East, there was this very strong belief among many peoples, Romans and peoples throughout the Middle East, that a king of the Jews would arise who would rule with fairness, justice, and integrity. The Roman historian Suetonius and Tacitus wrote about it. Similar thoughts were expressed by the Roman poet Virgil. There was a widespread belief in the world at that time that a king of the Jews would arise. If you remember last week from the Parthian Empire, they ruled Palestine for a number of years, right up until the time of Herod the Great, and Romans retook it. So they had extensive interactions with the Jews in Jerusalem, and they would have learned about their expectation for a Messiah, a king to be born, to rule the Jews. Now, the Parthian emperor during the time of the Magi was called Phraates IV. Now, he ruled from 37 to 2 BC, and we have lots of images of him because his face was on all the Parthian coinage during that era. You can see this picture of him, this image of Phraates IV. And last week we talked about how brutal Herod the Great was in slaughtering his own family and the baby boys around Bethlehem. Well, history tells us that Phraates IV made Herod the Great look like a Boy Scout. He slaughtered his own father to become powerful, the emperor. His father had many wives, and Phraates killed nearly 30 of his brothers so that they wouldn't be no threat to his rule. He traded 5 sons of his sister to Roman servitude so they would not pose a threat. When one of his own sons led a revolt against him, he was so brutal in putting it down, the rebellion, that most of his subjects truly hated and despised him. The wise men would not have been happy with his rule. They were priests of Zoroastrianism, a faith which valued righteousness and right living. So they were looking for a king who would come, who would rule fairly and wisely and govern with justice and righteousness. And when they saw the confluence of Jupiter and Saturn or whatever they saw, they linked it with this truth about a king of the Jews that would arise and bring peace and order to the world. That's why they were willing to travel almost 1,200 miles from what we know now as an area around Tehran through the Fertile Crescent to Bethlehem in Judea. Now, that distance is greater than the distance between Boston and Chicago. That distance is only 980 miles. They were traveling 1,200 miles. So I asked Google for a question about how far would a camel travel in an hour? And the answer they came back was, a camel would travel with a rider about 2.5 miles an hour. So let's say they rode 10 hours a day. That trip would take at least 50 days. The Magi were motivated to find this baby who was to be born King of the Jews. Jesus represented to them a hope for a better world, a better life than what they were experiencing under Phraates the Fourth. So the logical place to look for this king was in Jerusalem. So they traveled to Jerusalem following a well-known travel route, and they arrived there. When they saw a star over Bethlehem that again confirmed what they had seen back in Parthia and what Herod had told them, that this king was born in Bethlehem. The second lesson we can learn out of the story of the Magi is this. It's about hope. The birth of Jesus brings hope for a troubled world. It brought hope. The Magi were looking for a king who would rule powerfully and righteously in the world. They were looking for hope. You know, were they disappointed that they never saw that happen, that Jesus rule in the way they expected him to? We don't know. But what we can surmise is that the birth of Jesus represented a real hope in the future for the Magi. Jesus, by his life and death, brings hope to people everywhere because he came to bring new life. Jesus said, I am come that they may have life, and they may have it to the full or abundantly. He came to bring life and purpose to people through the forgiveness of sin and a restored relationship to God. Brings new life. That was the story of Padina in the video we saw in Iran and of her mother. And she had lost hope. She lost hope. She could never satisfy her God. And she found new hope in Jesus. But there was also hope for the world, for the future, that one day Jesus is going to return a second time and he will rule as a King of Kings and Lord of Lords with justice and righteousness. The Apostle Peter says it this way in 1 Peter. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. By his great mercy he has given us a new birth into a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. Do you have that kind of hope? It's a hope that God is in charge, that he has your best interests of our lives always on his mind, that we have nothing to fear in the world. That hope comes simply from calling on the name of Jesus. You know, I love the story of Padina because in the video, she just said, okay, Jesus, I'll try you for a week and we'll see what happens. And it's very clear that she had no faith. She didn't believe Jesus that would be any different than Allah. She didn't have any faith. Yet she bowed before Jesus, and he met her. He'll meet anyone, anywhere, any place today if we only bow before him and invite him to be a part of our lives. Jesus wants to bring hope to everyone's life. Well, the last thing we want to note about the Magi concerns their reaction when they actually entered the house where Mary, Joseph, and Jesus were living. Listen again to Matthew 12:11. On entering the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they knelt down and paid him homage. Then opening their treasure chests, they offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Now, that is the reading through the New Revised Standard, our Pew Bible. Other translations say the Magi kneeled before the baby Jesus and worshipped him. They were doing what we do as a church when we gather every Sunday, that we gather on Sunday mornings to worship Jesus, to give him the honor that is due him because of all that he's done. You know, George W. Bush, the 44th president of the United States, passed away a little over a week and a half ago. On Tuesday of this week, you could see the long lines of people walking around his coffin in the rotunda, the Capitol building, honoring his memory. Wednesday, his funeral service was held in the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C. Thursday, they flew him back to Texas, his home, and they put him on a train that was colored in presidential colors, and people lined along the train route as they went back. They were honoring his memory and what he had done. People came to pay tribute to him for what he did in life. But that is his tribute after he dies. But the Magi didn't come to pay homage to someone who had died. They came to pay homage to a baby who would one day die on the cross. And that's pretty unusual. They brought gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. They brought expensive gifts that symbolically represented who Jesus is. Gold is a symbol of royalty. You know, today, anybody who has money can buy gold. But in Jesus' day, in those earlier days, the only people who had gold were kings and royalty. It was their exclusive property. It represented their power and their prestige. Frankincense was an incense that was used on special occasions and was used in the temple worship by the priests in Jerusalem, according to Leviticus. You see, Jesus came to be the true high priest that would bring us into God's presence once and for all. That's what a priest does. A priest represents the people to God and represents God to the people. Jesus is the high priest that did it once and for all. Myrrh is a perfume that was mixed with spices and was used to anoint wealthy people and their body at burial. John tells us in his gospel that after Joseph of Arimathea claimed Jesus' body from the Roman soldiers, that Nicodemus, remember, who had visited Jesus earlier in the night, came with myrrh and spices totaling almost 75 pounds to anoint Jesus' body. Jesus came to be the true Savior, the final sacrifice for the sins of the world. During Christmas, we buy gifts for family and friends. We ask our kids or our family members, what do you want for Christmas? We buy gifts based upon the tradition of the Magi presenting their gifts to the baby Jesus. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's good, and we enjoy it. But I have to correct something I said last Sunday, when I said Mary and Joseph and Jesus had no resources when they left for Egypt, because they left that very night after the Magi had appeared. In fact, the Magi brought their gift and their resources, the gold, the frankincense and myrrh, that they could sell and use for the travel, to buy food, to set themselves up in Egypt. They brought their gifts to someone who was poor. Mary, Joseph, and Jesus had nothing. Now, I don't think the Magi were asking each other what they wanted for Christmas. I don't think Caspar was saying to Balthazar, what do you want for Christmas? I don't think Balthazar asked Melchior if he wanted a Dunkin' Donuts gift card or a Patriot shirt and coffee mug. The gifts they brought were not brought to benefit them, but to honor Jesus. And this is our third point. Christmas is meant to honor Christ. How are you going to honor Christ this Christmas? You know, if you go back and recall the tales and about the life of St. Nicholas, who was a priest, a Christian minister in the area of Turkey around circa 280 A.D., it says he began to give gifts to kids, but he gave gifts to kids who were poor because he was seeking to meet their needs. But in many ways, our culture has made that Christmas all about us. Certainly our retail industry needs us to buy gifts for each other because Christmas sales make or break their bottom line. You know, each year it's interesting to watch. Black Friday starts earlier and earlier and goes longer and longer as each retailer seeks to get a leg up on their competition. You know, as I said last week, this series is based upon a series sermon done by the pastor in the Church of the Resurrection out in Kansas City. And he talked about a friend who wrote a book entitled Christmas is Not Your Birthday. And the point that book makes is that kids often think they have two birthdays, their own birthday and Christmas, because they get gifts. But Christmas is really Jesus' birthday. Now, Sue Ellen will tell you, I really like buying gifts for my kids and grandchildren. Now that my kids are adults, we've kind of given in to the modern tradition of giving cash along with a couple of smaller gifts. But in many ways, I miss the fun of trying to figure out what they will like and trying to surprise them. And that's part of the joy of buying gifts. But again, let me say, there's nothing wrong with that. I think the wise men thought carefully about how they should honor a king with the gifts they brought. And they brought gifts that truly honored a very unique king. But they brought gifts to honor one who was also very poor. How will you honor Jesus this Christmas with your gifts? Now, Sue Ellen would usually have a birthday cake and we would sing happy birthday to Jesus. That's a nice little tradition, especially if you have young kids. Or we would find a family to help out with gifts at Christmas. That's part of what we do when we buy gifts through the Wish Project. In our family, Sue Ellen, in the last, kind of has led the way in this over the last 10 years, she would encourage the kids to buy her gifts through an organization like World Vision, buying animals for families in need around the world, or giving funds for microloans for families to smart little home businesses that they could earn a living. And the rationale behind that is, if most of us have what we want and what we already have, everything we need, what do we really need more at Christmas? So I believe that there's an even greater joy to be found when we intentionally find ways to honor Jesus, when we seek to help those who are struggling or less fortunate than us. Joy is a theme throughout the Christmas story, and I think joy comes when we help someone who is really struggling. So this year, we're going to do something a little different. On Christmas Eve, we'll be taking an offering, not for the church, but to support the ministry of Living Waters in Lowell. And that's a Christian ministry to the homeless and poor in downtown Lowell. The staff there are all volunteers. They don't get paid at all, so all this goes directly to support the ministry. So I would encourage you to pray about what you would give for that and tell your friends or family who are coming about it. I'll be sending out an email to the guys who are going to serve Living Waters next Saturday morning at breakfast. And I'm going to encourage them, and I'm going to say to you too, if any of you have in your closets coats, gently used coats that you don't wear anymore, I know I've got a couple sitting there, bring them next Saturday. Ladies, if you have them and you're not coming with us to serve, bring them to the office this week so that we can bring them up to them and again bless them. It's a small thing. Take a look at all that we have. How can we bless others? How do we honor Jesus this season? You know, there are probably many other ways that we can do it and honor Jesus at Christmas if you just pause and think about it. But Proverbs 14:31 really sums up, I think, the message of the Magi. And it says this: if you oppress poor people, you insult the God who made them. But kindness shown to the poor is an act of worship. As Christians, we want to keep Christ in Christmas. Hopefully that encounters more than just saying Merry Christmas rather than Happy Holidays. How will you honor Jesus this Christmas? Giving help to the disadvantaged is one very real way to worship God this Christmas season, just as the Magi offered their gifts to a very poor family that first Christmas.